Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Thursday, February 20th. I want to welcome Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now.
So good to be with you, Ed.
Hey, this is, I was just noticing as I was writing on my little sheet here for the program, February 20th, 2020. It's 2/20/2020.
Oh, wow. And it'll never happen again.
Not in my lifetime.
Also, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but I'm going to ask the guy who knows.
Yes.
And that's the poster boy for rugged individualism, Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Ed. All I know is I'm not going to live long enough to see this day again, so enjoy while we have it.
Yeah, so I wrote it out, 2/20/2020, and again, it's just one of those things where you go, huh, yeah. It means nothing to me. I'm not really people will see things in numbers that it means something to them, and my dad's that way. He's an engineer, you know, that was his occupation, and electronics engineer, and so all his life he just viewed things. So he'll call me up sometimes and say, hey, guess what? My birthday, if you add the numbers, you know what I'm saying? I'm going, okay, Dad, that's really, I'm a word guy, you're a numbers guy.
That's
so
cool.
Anyway, maybe I got a little bit of my dad in me, who knows.
There you go.
All right, Ray, are you in Kansas City today?
I sure am. Where it is bright and sunny, and it's cold, but hey, we got sunshine. So
I don't want to hear
happy.
It. I don't want to hear it. We got nothing but rain here.
Ugh.
We're becoming like the Seattle of the South or something. But
you know, I have to cross the street, go outside to come to the studio.
Yeah,
and
with two buildings.
I commented on to someone when I walked into this building. I am sure. There is not this kind of weather in heaven.
And there better not be, right?
Because heaven is a happy place.
Yeah.
It really is.
That's right.
I know. It's been kind of a miserable winter. So anyway, it really is kind of a. I use this to kind of check my natural complaining tendencies by reminding myself this is a first world problem. If all I got to worry about
is
the fact that we've got a lot of rain, and we're not even down south of us in Jackson, they got flooding. Mm-hmm. So nothing really to complain about. It's just my own personal
uncomfortable.
Yes,
uncomfortable.
But we'd be happy for the sun to come out.
Yes, we would, absolutely. All right. Let's, by the way, want to kind of give a little bit of a tease, folks. You want to stick around till the bottom of the hour. From 10:30 to 11 o'clock, we'll have a special guest in studio with us, Dr. Robert Jeffress, pastor of First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas. His program, Pathway to Victory, can be heard on AFR weekdays at 6 to 6:30 a.m. Central Time. We're going to be talking about his new book that he has out. We're going to be talking about the Democratic debates. We're going to be talking about the end times as much as we can fit in. We are going to do it when Dr. Jeffress comes. Mm-hmm. I think he's across the street videotaping a special. Mm-hmm. He did devotions for us. I told him, I said, when you're here, we will wring the rag dry. So we'll get everything we can. So you want to stick around for that, folks. All right. Let me just ask both you and Ray, did you guys watch the debates last night?
Yeah, it was way past my bedtime.
Yes, because you come in at like 4 in the morning.
Well, I get up around 4:30 or so.
Okay.
So I normally, but I determined last night I was going to stay up because it started at 8 o'clock Central Time last night.
Right.
And I have no regrets because
It was wild.
I'm being told by other people who have seen other debates, this was the best yet because it was the night of the long knives. You want to use every kind of description.
Yes.
They were spitting nails at each other evening.
I heard Chris Matthews, Ray, and then we'll let you jump in here too and get. We're going to talk about the debate and who's the winners and losers. But I saw Chris Matthews talk about the debate right afterwards, and he said it reminded me of a boxing match from the 1950s when a guy would get like his eye opened up and would be bleeding. Of course, they go into the corner and try to fix it up. He said the opponent would hit that spot over and over and over again to keep opening it up. Mm-hmm. And he said that's what it was like, and that is a perfect description.
A brawl.
Ray, what, did you get a chance to watch?
Yeah, I did, and they went after I want to say poor Michael Bloomberg, right? It's not a word you would think, but they beat Elizabeth Warren, came out of the gate.
Yes.
And was swinging. She came out. I mean, none of this nice to have you on stage.
Right.
Oh, man.
We're all on the same team.
He was a punching bag in that first hour. And yeah. I think he took a lot of hits and didn't. I thought he fought back better in the second hour. But, boy, that first hour, they were piling on the billionaire.
Welcome to the party, pal.
It was a rough night. Now, we're going to get into some of the specifics from that debate last night. But down the road in Phoenix, Arizona, there was President Donald Trump. Now, he is fitting into a pattern here.
Yes.
Wherever the Dems go, I'm not far away.
Right.
I think that's his strategy for this election campaign. So he had a big rally down in Phoenix last night. So what I want to do to start off is play a little bit of a montage. You're going to hear some Democrat candidate voices, and you're going to hear President Trump. A little bit of music in the background here because this is how Fox and Friends let off their show this morning. But it'll give you a little taste of what was going on both in Las Vegas at the debate last night and then at the president's rally in Phoenix, Arizona. It'll be cut number 5.
Washington Democrats keep on losing their minds. They hate the fact that we're winning. Now they have a new member of the crew, Minnie Mike. And I hear he's getting pounded tonight.
A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
All the mayor has to do is say, you are released from the non-disclosure agreement. Period.
I don't think you look at Donald Trump and say, we need someone richer in the White House.
Mike Bloomberg owns more wealth than the bottom 125 million Americans.
Bernie Sanders and Mike Bloomberg. Let's put forward somebody who's actually a Democrat.
So there you have it. That's that was the to-ing and fro-ing last night. It was I wish I had a TV at home, had a split screen.
Yes.
So I could have watched the rally there in Phoenix along with the debate. But let's get into the debate a little bit. This was the first time that former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg was on the stage with his opponents.
Right.
Right now, up to now, he's been spending a whole lot of money.
It's like $400 million?
$400 million on ads.
Right.
All right. So, you know, the ads are nicely produced and put everybody in a nice light. Last night, he walked out on the stage. You know, when they walked out on the stage, Bloomberg was the last to walk out. And he looked like, oh, boy, what have I done? I don't think I'm going to have a good night here. And he did not, because I would say overall he was the focus of the attacks of the other five who were on the stage with him. But, you know, he fired back every now and then. Here's an example. Here's a former mayor of New York, Bloomberg, asked if he supports Bernie Sanders' tax plan. And this was the response on that. This is cut number 1.
Mayor Bloomberg, you own a large company. Would you support what Senator Sanders is proposing?
Absolutely not. I can't think of a ways that would make it easier for Donald Trump to get reelected than listening to this conversation. It's ridiculous. We're not going to throw out capitalism. We tried that. Other countries tried that. It was called communism, and it just didn't work.
And Bernie said, I'm insulted by that.
Oh, listen. You know, Ray, we're going to talk about Joe Biden in a second, I'm sure. But Joe Biden kind of disappeared on this stage for long stretches. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren especially. You know the kids in school who used to always throw their hands up when the teacher would ask a question? Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Yeah, I know the answer.
Those two had their hands up almost the entire night. I got to say something. And that was one of those moments where I thought Mayor Bloomberg, said the right thing. He's defending capitalism against some out-and-out socialist ideas. And they mentioned communism, and right. Bernie Sanders did not like that.
Right. He dropped the C word.
Yes.
He called it what it was.
Right.
He called it communism. And Bernie took strong exception to that. And they had, later in the debate, they had quite the exchange about that. I thought Bloomberg, easily got the better Bernie Sanders on that point because, let's face it, it is a kind of communism that he's espousing. So big point to Bloomberg on that.
You know, I thought, you know, we heard Elizabeth Warren right out of the gate go after Michael Bloomberg. And the reason they had to do that, I think, is because your point exactly, Fred, $400 million worth of ads, you get to say whatever you want in the way you want to say it when you run political ads. And that is all people, most people around the country knew about Michael Bloomberg,
yeah,
is what they were seeing in those ads. And those ads are everywhere. Yeah. Every time I go online, mm-hmm, on almost any website, including conservative websites, when I look at hockey highlights,
yeah,
there's a Mike Bloomberg ad I have to watch before I can watch highlights from the Bruins game.
Uh-huh.
His ads are everywhere, and you cannot allow him to define himself like that, especially since, as he admitted last night on the stage, this is his first entrance into the rough and tumble battle that they've been having. They had to go after him, and Elizabeth Warren, right out of the gate, scored big, yeah, on him, and just that was the beginning of a very rough night for Michael Bloomberg. The question I have is how many Democratic voters were paying attention last night, mm-hmm, or how many will simply allow those ads to define Michael Bloomberg?
Well, let's have a listen. You've been mentioning that, Elizabeth Warren. Here's the problem. Bloomberg's ad campaign has been working, according to the polls.
Right.
Because all of a sudden, he's up there, he's bumping against Sanders.
Yes.
In some of the mainline national polls. Those. That is why, as you mentioned, Elizabeth Warren went after Mike Bloomberg last night. And I think there was a bit of a strategy here in trying to paint Mike Bloomberg as a photocopy of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So I think
Trump
2.0. I think that was it. Cut number eight, Brent.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk.
So there you have it. She's gone down the list. Of course, on the news, the last few days have been some old videotapes of what things Bloomberg, when he was mayor, what he did with stop and frisk, et cetera, et cetera. So that was her strategy last night and the strategy of the others to try to paint Bloomberg as another Donald Trump.
You know, Ray, I think that strategy was very effective. Again, we'll have to wait and see how many Democrats were actually watching. Because that's the only way you're going to change your mind from the picture, the portrait of Michael Bloomberg that you're seeing on the ads. You're going to have to pay attention to what happened last night, even if it's in watching clips. But I do not think he fared very well in some of these attacks. For example, the questioning of why he has not released his tax returns.
Yeah.
Okay. He said that it's because I'm really rich,
yeah,
and it takes a long time. In fact, I think he said I can't go to the tax return
TurboTax.
He said something. I can't go to TurboTax or something like that. It was a slam against all the other people on the platform and most Americans. I don't think he fared too well with some of these body blows that he got.
You know. The thing that he's got going for him is that today, Ed, today, if he wants to drop another $100 million,
right,
he can do it. It's pocket change. Mm-hmm. He can do it again tomorrow and the day after and the day after. Was this enough to derail him? I thought, Fred, it's enough to maybe slow him down a little bit, but he's got the money to keep going as long as he wants, right?
Oh, there's no question about it. And he's not on the ballots this Saturday for the caucuses,
right,
in Nevada. And I don't think he's on the ballot in South Carolina.
No, I think Super Tuesday is his, yeah, first shot.
It's his first time around. So he's got 10 days or so, 2 weeks, in order to recover from whatever happened last night. But there's a flip side to all of this, too. Bloomberg stood out last night against the other five because the other five, and I'm talking about Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden and Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah.
All right. He stood out against them because he was a defender unapologetically of capitalism.
Right.
That was really interesting last night. In fact, in our next cut here, Chuck Todd, one of the journalists asking questions last night, I think he was quoting Bernie Sanders, who has said something along the line that billionaires shouldn't even exist.
Right, because that's what Bernie Sanders is saying.
Right.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders has said that. Now, he's not talking about getting rid of.
Right.
He's talking about nobody should be a billionaire because that means they're not paying enough taxes.
Right.
They're not being fair. So Chuck Todd asked that of Bloomberg last night. Now, listen to what Bloomberg had to say. It's cut number two.
Mayor Bloomberg, should you exist?
I can't speak for all billionaires. All I know is I've been very lucky, made a lot of money, and I'm giving it all away to make this country better. And a good chunk of it goes to the Democratic Party as well.
Is it too much? Have you earned too much money? Has it been an obscene amount of money? Should you have earned that much money?
Yes. I worked very hard for it, and I'm giving it away.
Thank you, Halleck.
So that was it. That was interesting. He says, you know, what's wrong with hard work?
Right.
What's wrong with building a company that you can do extremely well in and then be able to give it away to people?
Yeah.
Versus the others who talk about using taxes to bring, you know, free tuition, free medical care for everybody, all of that sort of thing. So he kind of stood out from there. And sounded more like a Republican than he did a Democrat.
Well, at least on terms of that, Ray, I don't know whether he's going to give it all away or not. I think that was hyperbole. But listen, some of the things that he was facing in terms of what other people were saying, because it was not just Bernie Sanders saying we need to take more from billionaires like you, Michael Bloomberg, through taxes. He was talking about. In fact, he mentioned in response to this, I don't know if you got this clip, Fred, but he said to Michael Bloomberg, yeah, your workers helped make you a billionaire.
Yeah.
And some of those workers need to be on the board of directors and all that kind of thing. Michael Bloomberg was facing real socialist ideology on that platform.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And you know, one of the things I noted was how many times the other five versus Bloomberg were talking about fossil fuels again and again and again. I mean, this country is in trouble if any of those five do become president, because it sounded like last night they want to stop all offshore drilling.
Right.
They set a date of like 2050 when we'll all be dead. Politicians have a way of doing that. Yeah, by 2050
you won't be around. Answer for your prediction.
But it's kind of scary. You know, Sanders talks about, well let's use trains. You know, he likes to go to Denmark to compare it.
Right.
You can't take what's happening in Denmark and put it here. The other thing was Bernie Sanders last night saying, hey, Medicare works great in Canada. I always just flinch when I hear someone who is promoting socialized medicine saying, hey, it works great in Canada. No, it doesn't.
I have personal knowledge of that.
I come from there.
Yeah.
Do you want to spend 8 months waiting with a bad hip to get an operation?
Yeah.
That's what happens in Canada. On weekends, they shut down hospitals. You have to go to the next town to go to an emergency room. All right? It's not working in Canada. That's why they're considering going back to private medical care.
Right.
Medical insurance there. So, you know, it's the idealism of the left. Oh, all of this is just going to work and everybody's going to be real happy. And, you know, that was in play last night. There was another funny point that I just wanted to play this. Bloomberg, again, he bounced back a few times because Sanders was adamant about being a billionaire and that he has 8 homes, I think Bloomberg does.
Right.
Well, Bloomberg shot back at that about how many houses do you have, Senator Sanders? Cut number 3.
What a wonderful country we have. The best known socialist in the country happens to be a millionaire with 3 houses. What'd I miss here?
Well, you'll miss that I work in Washington, House 1.
That's the first problem.
Live in Burlington, House 2.
That's good.
And like thousands of other Vermonters, I do have a subcamp. Forgive me for that. But where is your home? Which tax haven
New
do
York,
you have your home?
New York City, thank you very much.
Yeah, well,
and I pay all my taxes. And I'm happy to do it.
So there was Bernie Sanders is a millionaire and he owns three houses.
Yeah, Ray, that's I'm not sure that's real Karl Marx, is it?
Look, big props to Michael Bloomberg because he stood up for capitalism.
Right.
In the face of this, quote, democratic socialism and the nonsense that Sanders is spewing, he stood up for what he had done for his work. And yes, he said several times, I got lucky. Well, he did. But he did well for himself. He's $64 billion or whatever he's got. You know, Americans, they don't like their politicians to apologize. And I think he got points last night because he stood up and did not apologize for the money he made and for the capitalist system that made it possible. So at least on that point, big, big props to him.
Now, Fred, absolutely. And one of the things that he got hit with, talking about Michael Bloomberg, and we're not picking on him. Mm-hmm. His co-Democrats they picked on him. Was this whole thing of these non-disclosure agreements? Now, I guess the women who have worked for everyone who works for
some,
him,
some of the women, yeah,
okay, have had to sign and sign non-disclosure agreements, mm-hmm. and there are rumors that he has sexually harassed women, but they can't come forward because of these non-disclosure agreements, and that is what was thrown at him on a time or two by, I think it might have been the women on the platform, but maybe some of the others too. Why don't you free these ladies from their non-disclosure agreements so we can find out the truth about whether you have said ugly things and sexually harassed the women who have worked for you?
Yeah, and his response to that was basically they willingly signed this. We didn't put a gun to their head. They signed this sort of thing. The bottom line was he has no intention of doing that because it was an agreement, a contract between two parties. Now, you can still criticize him for that. Just wanted to mention one more thing. I know we have to go to a break here, but the sparring wasn't only involving Bloomberg last night. There's also Mayor Pete and Buttigieg, and also Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota. They went at each other a little bit last night, too. Buttigieg going after Klobuchar after a moderator asked her about forgetting the Mexican president's name. That was kind of an interesting moment in the debate. Cut number four.
You're staking your candidacy on your Washington experience. You're on the committee that oversees border security. You're on the committee that does trade. You're literally in part of the committee that's overseeing these things. And we're not able to speak to literally the first thing about the politics of the country to ourselves.
Are you trying to say that I'm dumb or are you mocking me here, Pete?
So there was a bit of tension there. You know, they're all wrestling for position here.
Right.
So Bloomberg, I think, was the major target last night. But somebody in the analysis this morning, they were saying a lot of these people forgot that it's Bernie Sanders that's out in front in the polls right now.
Yes. And in fact, he mentioned that one time.
Yes. He's leading in all the polls. And what a lot of Democrats are worried about is if Bernie Sanders keeps up this momentum that he has, and he carries it through Super Tuesday, because Super Tuesday includes California this time around.
And Texas.
If he gets 100 delegate lead or more, it's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah.
And so some of the Democrat and analysts were saying, wait a minute, maybe we picked the wrong target last night. Maybe it should be Bernie Sanders, because if Bernie Sanders is going up against Donald Trump, a lot of Democrats think that puts the nail in the coffin for the Democrats.
All right. Well, we're coming up on a break, so I'm going to put you two on the spot. I want you to give me quickly just one word answer. Winner and loser from the debate last night, Fred?
Winner, probably I would say Elizabeth Warren.
All right. Loser?
Loser last night, I would probably put Pete Buttigieg.
Okay. What do you think, Ray?
Winner Bernie Sanders, loser Buttigieg.
All right. I'll say winner Elizabeth Warren and loser Joe Biden.
Because
we haven't talked about Joe Biden.
Was he even
for
there
a reason? Because he kind of
disappeared.
Was he there?
Was he there? I didn't see him.
All right. Dr. Robert Jeffress is coming up right after the break. You won't want to miss this next half hour. Join us then.
I think I've got a stumper for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
Yeah, it's funny now. But put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is. Da-dum, da-dum, da-dum,
da-dum. But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I was looking over our itinerary for our June and September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. We go to the Capitol, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, the Lincoln Memorial, the Korean and Vietnam Memorials, the Iwo Jima Memorial, Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, the Jefferson Memorial, and the National Archives, and the World War II Memorial, and including Mount Vernon. We go to Mount Vernon as well. So you can't do any more than what we do on our tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. We also go to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but the tours are back-to-back. So if you want to go with us in June, we're almost full, or September, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. All the information is there, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. The Southern Baptist Convention is launching a task force to probe the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. The ERLC is headed by Russell Moore, an outspoken critic of President Trump. In 2016, Moore called Trump an arrogant huckster and denounced then-candidate Trump's language about immigrants and women. He once called Christians who support Trump the Jimmy Swaggart wing of evangelicalism. Religion News Service reports that denominational leaders will determine if there is any validity to reports that some churches are withholding money because of the ERLC's politics. Many Southern Baptists are very concerned about what they call a leftward lurch. Last week, the Conservative Baptist Network was created, and in just a few days, nearly 4,000 people joined the group. So why does this matter to the average American? Well, the Southern Baptist Convention is the nation's largest non-Catholic denomination, and if they disengage from the culture war, it will be devastating. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. From Kansas City, Ray Pritchard, Dr. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries, and now joining us in studio, one of our favorites on American Family Radio, certainly the listeners on this program, Dr. Robert Jeffress, who's pastor of First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas, and his program, Pathway to Victory, can be heard on AFR weekdays from 6 to 6:30 a.m. Central Time. Dr. Jeffress, welcome back to Today's Issues.
Well, great to be with you in person.
Yes, we've been wearing you out, I'm afraid, although Tim Wildman just texted. Buddy Smith was mentioning about all the things you've been doing here at AFA and AFR, and Tim said, well, he is very much like Donald Trump when it comes to energy. So
nobody is like Donald Trump when it comes to energy, but thank you.
Well, we one of the reasons we want to have you on, and whenever we have you, especially in studio, we always want to kind of pick your brain about things that are happening in the culture. And Tim wanted me to ask you a question about eschatology. We're going to get to all that. But the real reason we have you on is you have a new book aptly titled Courageous, 10 Strategies for Thriving in a Hostile World. Because increasingly, and I've got to be honest, I'm 61 years old. I never thought I would really say this about America, but it is becoming increasingly hostile to the Christian worldview that many of us at least implicitly understood was the foundation of our country. tell us why you wrote this book and why now.
Well, it really is becoming, I believe, increasingly difficult for Christians to live out their faith in this world. You know, C.S. Lewis described the world as enemy-occupied territory. I think that's a great description. And, you know, you think about it, as Christians, we have incoming from every direction. We have attacks from a culture that's hostile toward the things of God, not to mention just the external attacks of everyday life that we have to deal with. We have attacks from within. As Christians, we still have a residue of that old sin nature that pulls us away from God. And if that weren't enough, we have attacks from below. We have an adversary, the devil, who has a plan to destroy everything important to us. And what I've done in this book, Courageous, is I've used the 10 survival tactics that survivalists say you have to utilize if you're in a plane crash or an earthquake or an avalanche. Things like don't panic, remember your training, do the next right thing. And I applied those to how to live out your faith. My friend, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, read the book, and he said, you know, I've taught survival tactics to Marines for years. I never thought to apply them and how they apply to living the Christian life. And so that's what this book, Courageous, is about. It's a hope-filled book, but it's a book for any Christian who feels under attack. And I would imagine that's every one of us in one way or another.
You know, Pastor Jeffress, I think right now, and I think you've alluded to this a couple of times on the air, that we may be in a bit of a reprieve right now, evangelical Christians in this country. President Trump has done everything he promised to do in his election campaign, and there's been some great rejoicing over that. But there will come a day when President Trump is not in the White House.
Right.
And you were warning us again this morning that the trajectory of our country continues on the decline.
Right. I mean, right now I'm preaching through the book of Revelation, verse by verse, a year-long study. This week, we're in Revelation 13 about the one-world government, the Antichrist. We know that the final 7 years of Earth's history, if we believe the Bible, is going to be under a one-world government where there'll be no freedom of commerce, no freedom of speech, no freedom of religion, which means America will have ceased to exist by that time, at least as we know her. And so I think we need to be aware of that. We don't need to be afraid, but we do need to be prepared for it. And that's why I wrote Courageous, because I do believe that when the left regains control of this country, not if, but when, there's going to be an attack against the church and Christians like we can't imagine. They're going to come back at us, not incrementally, but intensively, and we need to be prepared. And that's why I wrote the book Courageous. And it's not just for adults. I think parents need to be preparing their children and grandchildren. My children and grandchildren are growing up in a culture that's much more hostile toward Christianity than it was when I was growing up.
Mm. Robert Ray Pritchard here. I'm looking at the table of contents of your terrific new book, Courageous, and just reading through these survival tips. And I wanted to ask you about survival tip number 4, develop a victor, not a victim mindset. And it's very easy, I think, today for Christians to feel,
yes,
oh, woe is us, we're backed into a corner. So how do we avoid being a victim? How do we become victors in a world like this?
Ray, I mean, you're a fellow Dallas Seminary graduate. You remember our friend Howard Hendricks. He used,
yes,
to say so many Christians walk around like they're the cover photo for the Book of Lamentations. I mean, you know, with this, you know, sour expression, oh, woe is us. And that's not to be the attitude at all. And look, this isn't positive thinking mumbo jumbo. You know, the Bible says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. And if you're in a threatening situation, a plane crash, whatever it is, they'll tell you, you've got to have that victor, not victim mindset. 80% of people freeze when they get in a challenging situation. We don't need to do that. And I use the illustration of Joseph. You know, Joseph could have had a victim mindset. I mean, sold into slavery by his brothers, falsely accused of rape, thrown into prison. But remember when he saw his brothers, what he said, instead of exacting revenge against them, he said, and as for you, you meant it for evil, but God used it for good. Mm-hmm. Joseph believed in a God who was bigger than adverse circumstances or the adverse people in his life. And I think that's a key to being a victor, to realize there is nothing that has come into the life of a child of God that hasn't been sifted through the will of God and the love of God and the purpose of God. And if it's come that far, it's come for a great purpose in our life.
Dr. Jeffress, I want to follow up on this kind of idea about Christians not being afraid, because you travel, you do some traveling and speaking. So, you're, in other words, you're not just locked into how Christians are doing in Dallas.
Right.
So, what is your sense? I think about these, I don't remember how many there were, maybe 18 or 19 Egyptian Coptic Christians
right.
who were beheaded on that beach in
right.
Libya by ISIS, wearing the orange jumpsuits. Many of us remember that. And I think about the strength of their courage. They grew up, though, in a hostile environment. God prepared them, apparently, for that. When you travel around and you meet with Christians, how prepared do you think Christians are right now for the kinds of things that you're talking about are on the horizon?
Honestly, not prepared at all. I think most Christians are going to fold like a cheap suit when the hostility comes. I think we have produced and become Christian snowflakes when it comes to this kind of suffering. And, you know, we think about those Coptic Christians, you know, how would we respond if we had the knife at our neck?
Right.
But even worse, what if the knife were at the neck of our children or our mate? Would we really hold on to the faith? I mean, I think, you know, that's something that one generation of Americans will face. It may not be mine or my children's, but that's coming. But in, there's other kinds of persecution, too, to face. The loss of your livelihood, the loss of
right.
your friends, and so forth. And I just don't think we're ready, which is why I've written this book, Courageous, to help prepare people.
Who's at fault because we're not ready?
Well, I think the church is at fault as a whole for not teaching Christians how to stand for truth. I think we're at fault, many churches, for not teaching truth and recognizing truth from error. You know, I really place the predicament of our society. I don't blame non-Christians for the sin and the ungodliness in our culture. What do you expect non-Christians to do but
right.
to sin? It's Christians who have failed to be that salt and light we talked
right.
about
right.
earlier that's responsible for the culture as it is.
We're talking with Dr. Robert Jeffress about his new book, Courageous, 12 Strategies or 10 Strategies for Thriving in a Hostile World. Robert, again, I'm just going down over these tips, and they're so fascinating. I've got to ask you about number 7 because I'm not even sure what it means, but what a thought. Beware of celebrating the summit. But we all want to have a party when we get to the summit. What's the danger there?
Well, the danger is, and mountain climbers, my dad was a mountain climber. I didn't inherit that gene, but he did and enjoyed doing that. But mountain climbers will tell you the most difficult, the most dangerous part of the expedition is not the ascent to the summit, but it's the descent after the summit. It's after the summit that a climber is worn out. He tends to be less careful. He's more prone to fall. And I think it's true. We can celebrate victories, but I think we need to remember right after we've made it through one challenge, there's always another challenge around the corner. And that's why Paul said, 1 Corinthians 10, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall.
Ray said, we're talking with Dr. Robert Jeffress about his new book, Courageous, 10 Strategies for Thriving in a Hostile World. We absolutely recommend that you pick up a copy of this book, folks. It is increasingly important that Christians prepare themselves for what we are facing and what we will face, and this book is one of those that's going to help you, help your church, get a copy for yourself and get a copy for your pastor or other church leaders so that they can, if they have not already, had their eyes awakened to what we are facing and what is coming upon the church. In case Christians are listening and they're getting a little nervous about all this kind of talk, would you just share this? I loved in your devotion this morning, you shared this story about the yappy dog.
Yeah.
Would you mind sharing that?
Yeah, Neil Anderson tells this story to illustrate that really Satan has no more control over our life than we allow him to have. He says when he was growing up, he said they had some neighbors that had this little yappy dog, and every time he'd go over there with his father and his brothers, the dog would, you know, come and start yapping at him, and the father and brother would stand there, but Neil says he was the one who ran away, and guess who the dog chased? And he said, you know, he'd find himself, you know, hopping up on a pickup truck while that yappy dog was yapping at him, and he said it wasn't the dog that threw him up there. It was his own fear of that dog. And finally, he decided to stand his ground. And so that dog came yapping, and he kicked a little rock that hit the mud, and the mud started running away. And his point was that Satan is like that little yappy mud. It has, he has no more power over us than we choose to allow him to say, have. And, you know, the fact is, yes, we've got challenges as Christians from without, from within, from Satan. We have an adversary, the devil, but he's already been defeated. His execution is on God's calendar. We don't need to fear him. Instead, as James 4:7 says, we need to resist him. Resist the devil, and he will flee from us.
Pastor Jeffress, we're in the midst of another election campaign.
Yeah.
And going back 2016, you were one of the first, and I know most of our audience is well aware of this, one of the first to endorse then-candidate Donald Trump. Took a lot of flack for that. And some of that flack is continuing to this day as we head into this another election campaign. Even within your own denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention, one body within the convention is the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, mm-hmm. headed by Dr. Russell Moore. Just 2 days ago, the executive committee of the SBC announced they were going to investigate what is going on within the ERLC because, according to reports, some Southern Baptist churches have let up on their giving to the cooperative fund. And at the crux of this seems to be a difference within some elements of the SBC about supporting Trump or not supporting him. And some say that supporting Trump as an evangelical Christian, you're showing a compromise in what you believe about God and the power of God, and that Christians today shouldn't be supporting a candidate, they say, like Donald Trump. What say you?
Well, you know, in 1980, I voted for Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was the first divorced president in history. When I voted for Ronald Reagan, I wasn't voting to endorse divorce. I was endorsing his policies. And I think everybody gets that. Some pretend they don't understand the evangelical dilemma and how could evangelicals vote. No, they're trying to shame us from not supporting President Trump because non-Christians and the ungodly hate the policies that he's instigating. We vote for him because of his policies. And without doubt, President Trump has become the most pro-life, pro-religious liberty, pro-Israel president that we've had in history. I mean, just look at what he's done in the life movement, being the first president to address the March for Life, putting judge after judge, 180 judges now in the federal courts who are all strict constitutionalists. Look what he's done with religious liberty just a few weeks ago in the Oval Office, affirming the right of students and children to pray in school. You never saw George Bush do that. You never saw Ronald Reagan do that. And when you look at what he's done with Israel, I mean, recognizing Jerusalem, he had me go over to do the prayer for the opening of that embassy in Jerusalem. No president, Republican or Democrat, had the guts to do that. I'm telling you, he is the most pro-faith president we've ever had. And look, he doesn't pretend to be perfect. I had dinner with him a couple of weeks ago after the acquittal and so forth. He called it his unimpeachment dinner, which but he's in a great frame of mind, but he is dedicated to these principles and policies, and I think it's imperative that Christians get out and vote.
So what's going to happen within the SBC?
I can't predict what will happen and what this study committee will produce. Our church is one. We did our own study committee. And we studied the different
First Baptist Dallas.
And we're one of the oldest churches in the SBC. And we came up, our committee looked at this and examined this and decided to redo our giving. And this was a couple of years ago. We weren't happy with the direction of some of the agencies in the convention, including the ERLC. So we said, as good stewards, we're going to direct our money to the things that we want to do. I know other churches are doing it. How many? I have no idea. But I think you will see some changes in the convention.
Dr. Jeffress, let me ask you this, since we have started touching on some of the political climate and the obviously the important election. We say that now every 4 years and have been for the last 20 years. How do you see this playing out? Well, you know, you saw the debate last night, I assume. So it's kind of strange in my lifetime. I wasn't a Christian growing up, but I was very conservative, very anti-communist. I can't believe we've got socialists who are running for the Democratic nomination. How do you see the rest of this year kind of playing out? I know you don't pretend to be a prophet, but
no.
In terms of the state of the country and the president who continues to draw just enormous, enthusiastic crowds, how do you see this playing out?
Yeah, again, with a caveat that I'm not a prophet on this. I think, first of all, you start with 67% of first-term presidents win a second term. So the odds are with the incumbent to begin with. You look at the economy and what is happening, that's a huge factor. And if the economy stays strong like it is right now, and if the president continues to fulfill his promises like he is, and I believe he will be, I mean, I think he's going to win a second term. I hesitate to say it because we can't be complacent. 25 million evangelical Christians didn't vote in 2016, and it is imperative that they get out and vote. And so I don't want to say it's going to be smooth sailing, but I have a hard time seeing how the Democrats are going to coalesce around anybody this time. And I think we have a good shot at winning.
Robert, there's been a lot of discussion about the whole question of evangelicals. And CT put out that editorial about calling for the president to be removed and so on. You've made an excellent case here. My question for the president in his reelection, which I agree with, by the way, but do you expect evangelicals to support the president in his reelection bid as strongly as we did 4 years ago?
Every time I'm with him, I say, Mr. President, you're going to win the evangelical vote by an even larger margin than the 81% you won in 2016. And the reason is, in 2016, many evangelicals voted for President Trump. They didn't know him like I did. They just knew they didn't want Hillary Clinton. So they voted for him with fingers crossed, hoping that he might be able to or would choose to fulfill his promises. 4 years later, we're looking back not on promises made, but promises kept. And it's a huge record he has to run on. And I think they're going to feel more confident voting for him this time.
Well, just two last questions. The first of those two I want to ask on behalf of Tim Wildman.
Okay.
And then the last question will be regarding your book. I want our folks to pick up a copy of that. And again, we're talking with Dr. Robert Jeffress primarily about his new book, Courageous, 10 Strategies for Thriving in a Hostile World. But this is what Tim wanted me to ask you. He said, please ask Robert about this. He was talking about some of the recent headlines, plagues of locusts, of all things, the coronavirus, you know, the rise of the socialists, earthquakes, so on and so forth. He wants to know what you think in terms of, are we living in the last days? I know that is a loaded question because there have been headlines before of this and that, and I know he's not asking you to predict the day or the hour. What is your sense in terms of the clock, I guess?
You know, it's funny. Last Friday night, Lou Dobbs asked me the very same question. He said, Pastor, you know, a giant asteroid headed toward the Earth,
yes.
Locust, you know, coming, and this pandemic possibility. And I said, Lou, it's so funny. I just preached on that last week in Revelation 8 and 9. Look, the Bible does say there is a coming end to this world as we know it. But Jesus also said, no man knows the time or hour. I remember my old friend at Fox News, Alan Combs, who's passed away. He said, Pastor, do you believe you'll live to see the coming of Jesus again? And I said, Alan, I don't know, but it really doesn't matter. He says, what do you mean it doesn't matter? I said, because I'm 60 years old, and I know in the next 30 years, either he's coming or I'm going. But either way, I'm going to meet God, and I need to be prepared. And I think that's the message for all of us. We don't know when the Lord is coming, when the end is going to come. The most important thing is to know Christ as Savior and be sharing him with as many people as possible.
Amen. Amen. All right, last word for you, Dr. Jeffress. Lots of people are listening. Why should they pick up a copy of this book? Take as long as you like, as long as it doesn't go more than 6 minutes.
No, I do think every Christian is facing some kind of attack in their Christianity. It may not be just from the hostility of the culture. A woman wrote to me and she said she had just picked up this book, Courageous, read the first chapter, Don't Panic. It was a young mother, and that very week she got news that she had cancer and only 3 to 4 months to live. Mm. And she said, you know, my first thought was to panic. What does this mean for my children or my husband? But then I remembered what you talked about from Joshua. Don't be fearful or dismayed. The Lord your God is with you. So this book, Courageous, will be a great practical help for any challenge you're facing in your life. And it's, I think, the most timely and boldest book I've written. But it's easy to read, and you can pick up a copy. The easiest way is Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. They have it on sale for 30% off right now.
Well, this is the boldest book you've written up to now. That's saying something, because you've been a bold champion for the Christian faith.
Hell yes. Yeah. Oh, no, that's one of my book titles, actually.
Thank you, Dr. Jeffress, for being on with us. That's Dr. Robert Jeffress, pastor of First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas. His program, Pathway to Victory, can be heard on AFR weekdays from 6 to 6:30 a.m. Central Time. The title of his book, again, is Courageous, 10 Strategies for Thriving in a Hostile World. Thank you,
Great
Pastor
to be with
Jeffress.
You guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
All right, yeah, that deserves a fist bump. If you're not watching online, Fred Jackson gave Pastor Jeffress a fist bump. Mm. We need more champions like Dr. Jeffress in the body of Christ and behind the pulpit. Ray, what do you think about the need to be courageous? You're a pastor and one of the best, in my opinion, as well. What would you say, folks?
First of all, we'd say to our listeners, get a copy of the book, because you know I'm looking over these survival tips. Man, we need this. Bend, don't break, take inventory, gain situational awareness. So what Dr. Jeffress was talking about is just, it's the practical reality of the days in which we are living. How close are we to the coming of the Lord? You know, nobody knows for sure, right? Nobody but the Lord knows. But if you just read the Bible, remember Billy Graham said you ought to read with the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other, right? And I think when you do that, you see this remarkable correspondence. And the Bible says in the last days, terrible times will come. My friends, they are upon us. They are upon us. Everybody better get ready. Jesus is coming, and I believe he's coming soon, Ed. Mm. So we need to take real seriously everything we've talked about in this half hour, because the times are pointing to the soon return of Jesus.
You know, Fred, with 24/7 news media and social media, we have access to world events in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be very easy, let's put it this way, for Christians to become afraid.
Yes.
At the same time, we have greater access to Bibles, multiple Bibles in most Christian homes in America,
mm-hmm.
Online access to the Word of God, to sermons from pastors and ministers like Dr. Mm-hmm. Robert Jeffress, like our own Ray Pritchard, others, great teaching. There cannot be a disconnect for Christians.
No.
If they are going to be inundated with this kind of information about what's happening here and around the world, almost instantaneously, they have got to be anchored in the Word of God,
yes.
Or the devil is going to have a field day.
Well, one of the important things, the points that Pastor Jeffress mentioned, is be prepared.
Right.
And I think that's what's behind this book. Because as he mentioned, the trajectory of our culture here in the United States is downward.
Right.
That things are going to get more difficult for true Bible-believing Christians.
Right.
Because don't forget, the devil hates the truth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the devil's crowd hates those who promote that truth. So we need to be ready for that. It's been really good over the last 3.5 years with President Trump, because he's a defender of those
right.
who still believe in the Bible and want to pray in public and stand up for their faith. But tough times are coming, and we need to be ready for that. And that's why his illustration of Joseph was so important.
Yes.
Despite how difficult it got, Joseph stayed true to God, and he left the results up to God.
Amen. All right, folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. Steve Jordahl is right around the corner, and we will come back with more here on Today's Issues. You're listening to American Family Radio. We'll be back in a bit.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.